This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. We're going to begin today with some memories of Nelson Mandela in Boston. The South African leader, who died late yesterday at the age of 95, came to this city in 1990, just 2 months after his release from prison.
He was a free man, but back home, apartheid was still in force. He came to thank Massachusetts and Boston for being among the first governments to pull investments out of South Africa and impose sanctions on banks and companies that did business with the South African government.
While here, he addressed hundreds of thousands of people on the Esplanade.
Until apartheid is ended, neither ourselves nor the international community can afford to lower our guard. Massachusetts has won a special place in our struggle, and Massachusetts has a special place in my heart.
Mandela also spoke at Madison Park High School in Roxbury.
If there is any appeal I could make, it is that the young people of Boston, and indeed the young people of the United States, must take it upon themselves to ensure that they receive the highest education possible so that they can represent us well in future. As future leaders.
Many people in Boston remember that day, among them Colette Phillips. She runs a PR agency. She was friends with one of Mandela's daughters who was going to school here, and she helped organize Mandela's visit.
When Nelson Mandela was coming out of leaving his entourage, I was in the car with the pool reporters. We were ahead of his motorcade, and I saw hundreds of people from South Boston with their children lining the streets to get a glimpse of Nelson Mandela and to wave to him. Mm. And you have to remember back, you know, at that time, Boston was still not yet over the whole busing issue and all of the racial tension. And that in itself, I think, signaled almost a new day, if you will, that here were these people who had never met Nelson Mandela but had heard about him and wanted to make sure that their children and themselves got an opportunity to welcome him to Boston.
So tell us another story about that day. And let me ask you, did you get a chance to meet him?
I did, and I almost did not get a chance to meet him because often you sort of, you know, miss the big stuff because you are dealing with the details. And the day after, I talked on the phone with his daughter, Zenny, who is a friend of mine, and she said to me, "Did you meet Daddy?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Colette, he cannot leave Boston unless you get a chance to meet him."
Wow, what an honor.
And it was. And so she called up Timba Vilakazi with the Fund for Free South Africa, and he took me up to his suite, and there he was, this wonderful presence. And he had on his tie, and it was a little crooked. And I went up to him and sort of fixed his tie, and I said to him, "This is what I usually do for my dad." And he just had the broadest smile on his face, and I had such I was like in awe.
It's a lovely memory, Colette. I remember that event back in 1990. It was an amazing day, celebration, music, bands from South Africa. I remember Paul Simon showed up.
Yes.
Remind us how that day went, because huge turnout, of course, on the Esplanade, more than 300,000 people. Tell us about that.
Yes. There were 3,000 media requests from around the world, from around the country, and locally. I think it was even more requests than when the Pope visited in 1980. What was so remarkable about that day, there was not one incident, no arrest, no one acted out, nobody did or said anything that was inappropriate. The fact that everybody was there to really see this man who was transcendent, it was just an unbelievable time. There was just an air of love and celebration and respect.
And maybe hope, I'd add
and
to
hope,
that.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, Colette Phillips, she's the owner of CPC Global Communications, and she helped arrange Nelson Mandela's visit to Boston back in 1990. Colette Phillips, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's turn now to Margaret Marshall. She's former Chief Justice of the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court and a native of South Africa. In the 1960s, Marshall joined the National Union of South African Students, a coalition of university students opposed to apartheid. Marshall's husband is the late Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times columnist Anthony Lewis. He died earlier this year, but in his long career, Lewis wrote frequently and eloquently about the cruelties of apartheid. In 1990, both Marshall and Lewis met Mandela in Johannesburg just a short time after he was released from prison. To this day, Margaret Marshall says it's one of the most remarkable moments she's ever experienced.
I mean, I just was awestruck, which is rather unusual for me, and he made us feel so at ease, and he walked close to Tony, and he put out his hand, and he said to Tony, "I'd like to thank you for everything that you did, writing for the New York Times, to support our struggle." And then he turned to me, and he said, "It's very nice to meet you, Margaret Marshall. I know," or words to the effect, "I know you have been a very courageous woman." We were tiny in the pantheon of people that he knew, respected, had fought with, had led, and yet he reached out to us and made us feel as if we were the special ones. It was a gift that he had, an absolute gift.
Chief Justice Marshall, if I may, one of the compelling reasons to hear from you today is your long personal history in the law. And I wonder, through that lens, what lessons do you gather from Nelson Mandela's life? Because in a way, his life is a symbol of how justice can be had, but that sometimes, I mean, famously, it's the title of his autobiography, there's a long walk to that justice.
There is a long walk, and I would say there are three things, three lessons, if any, that I have learned. The first is it makes one question the imposition of the death penalty. By South African standards, by the legal standards, by the criminal code at the time, he was a terrorist, and I put that in quotation marks. The fact that he was not executed, as everyone expected him to receive that punishment, has made a huge difference, not only to South Africa, but to the world. The second, he negotiated for the establishment of a constitutional democracy. The fact that South Africa has a constitutional democracy in the sense that we use it, to have an independent, separately standing constitutional court, where South Africans can go to the court to challenge their government in their government's actions, has made a huge difference. And third, as a leader, the first time the Constitutional Court issued a ruling against the African National Congress, at which time President Mandela was the head of that, it was a devastating political loss for the African National Congress. It was a judicial decision. And the next day, President Mandela walked out onto the steps of Parliament, the steps of Congress, and he said, "Today is a victory for all South Africans because it shows that no person, no institution, no political power is above the law." And I thought how often it is that courts around the world with new constitutional democracies and some old, there's not an automatic assumption that a court order will be obeyed. And what Nelson Mandela was doing, in addition to being a brilliant politician and a man of great moral courage, he was part of the building blocks to establishing the rule of law in South Africa. And from my point of view, that is one of his great, great legacies, not only to South Africa, but to the world.
Retired SJC Chief Justice Margaret Marshall. In 1998, Nelson Mandela returned to Massachusetts and gave a special address at Harvard University, where he once again touched on the theme of justice for all.
The greatest single challenge facing our globalized world is to combat and eradicate its disparity. While in all parts of the world, progress is being made in entrenching democratic forms of government, we constantly need to remind ourselves that the freedoms which democracy brings will remain empty shells if they are not accompanied by real and tangible improvements in the material lives of the millions of ordinary citizens of those countries.
Nelson Mandela speaking at Harvard University in 1998. Now, among those who were in Boston when Mandela visited in 1990 was the Reverend Eugene Rivers, co-founder of the Boston 10-Point Coalition. Reverend Rivers would go on to meet Mandela in Zimbabwe a little later in 1998. He joins us now. And Reverend Rivers, always a pleasure to have you. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hello, friends. How are you doing?
Good. So, first of all, I'd love a memory or two from that 1990 event in Boston.
The thing that's most striking to me, reflecting on 1990, was the extraordinary power to inspire as an image and a symbol. And politics is about the art of the possible. It's also about the symbolic. And without the symbolic, the possible doesn't become possible. Hmm. And one of the significant things for Boston, at a couple of different levels, was that here was Nelson Mandela in Boston almost 10 years after the Charles Stewart case, where a white guy murders his wife and accuses a black guy and racially polarizes the city. Here is Nelson Mandela as a symbol of a moral symbol, 27 years of hard time, and then as a voice of reconciliation. And in Boston, that was an amazing phenomenon. Mm. And the other thing that was actually enormously powerful was that for countless numbers of young black people and young people in general, you have this image of a black man who was a symbol and a voice of reconciliation and of hope. Because if I can do 27 years, hard time, and then come back and go from that to be pretty much anything I want to be, that has enormous moral, political, and psychocultural significance for countless numbers of young people.
Yeah, talk about symbolism and the power of symbols there. I want to ask you about you got up close to him, you sort of had a meeting with him in Zimbabwe. It's a great story. Tell us what happened.
Very quickly. In December of 1998, I am in Harare, Zimbabwe, giving a presentation on what Boston does around youth violence stuff. We're in Harare, World Council of Churches. We're in the Harare Sheraton Hotel in the lobby with my 7-year-old daughter. And I see the fleet of cars pull up and all the guys roll out with the uniforms and the whole thing, right? So, this is my first time in Africa. And so, wow, what's going on? Right. So what happens, I look up. And I say, what's it? OMG? Oh, my God, right? Here comes the man, Nelson Mandela. I said, no, he didn't, right? So it's Nelson Mandela coming in with the shirt on. No tie. He's got that kind of funky, shirt that he used to wear when he moved off the suits, right? With President Robert Mugabe. So they come in, and they're sort of moving slow, and they got the guys there, and I've got my baby, and I said, I'm going to take the shot. President Mandela, would you shake my daughter's hand? Yeah, because what's he going to say? No, right? Right? And, yes, of course. And my daughter and her friend were there. And Sojourner, walks up. And this is like Nelson Mandela, who she had heard about because, as you can imagine, in my household, right, there's politics around the clock.
Right.
So we're talking Mandela, King, politics, Obama, whatever. So
but here's what I love about this idea, because he's got such humanity. He does stop.
I'll tell you what's interesting. Just if one is a student of sort of watching the dynamics of people, what was amazing is that infectious, irresistible smile was genuine at the sight of a child.
Hmm.
I mean, here's a guy who's a grandfather and a great-grandfather. And what was significant is that these two little cherubic-looking girls come up to him. They're half scared. They don't know, here's this man. There are all these soldiers around. And he was just as affectionate and grandfatherly and loving as one could imagine. It was astounding.
It's a lovely image. I want to ask you finally, Eugene Rivers, you mentioned your work in youth violence. You've been involved in social justice issues for a long time. As we think about the passing of Mandela, how did he inspire you, people like you?
Very quickly, there's an entire generation of black people in particular, lots of people globally, but black people in particular, who were inspired by the image of a black man, when you have all these images of criminals, gangsters, rap, I mean, all of that business, right? For years, you have this image of a black man who, on principle, was willing to commit his life and was willing to die. Now, that's an astounding image. And so for me, 40 years ago, the image of Mandela said, you know what? Here is your gold standard and your benchmark. Dude, when you're ready to die, when you're willing to go to jail for 27 years and risk death, now you've got something to say. And so Mandela has been for the world, for black men, black people, all people, this moral gold standard of conviction and resolve, where he was willing to stand and not compromise.
The Reverend Eugene Rivers, he's co-founder of the Boston 10-Point Coalition, recalling Nelson Mandela. Reverend Rivers, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you both.
I saw Nelson Mandela in South Africa in 1995. Here's what I recall about that trip and about the impact that one man had on an entire nation. He'd been elected president in 1994, and a year later, the new South Africa was preparing for the first round of free local elections. So there was still a sense of giddy hope and celebration everywhere you went. But there was also a sense of just how tenuous this whole transition to democracy and black majority rule was. The level of violence in Johannesburg was frightening. Few people walked the streets with a sense of security. I drove around with a black Soweto-born producer named Milton. He moved through Johannesburg with intense caution. Violent crime, including carjackings, were rampant. So when we came to a stop, he looked around with real fear, ready to hit the gas and run from the approach of anything that looked menacing. Milton had grown up in the dusty streets of the Soweto township. He'd lived through apartheid, witnessed the hard hand of the ruling Afrikaans white police force that terrorized his community. But that year, he was full of hope. Despite the threat of lawlessness in the streets, he could now vote in free elections, and Nelson Mandela was his president. I asked Milton, what does Mandela mean to you? He thought for a few seconds and said simply, to me, Mandela is a god. In any other context, I might have dismissed that as trite, but I knew he meant it. There was little else to say. On that same trip, I had dinner with a white, wealthy winemaker in Cape Town. In the context of South African politics, he was a liberal. He supported the transition to black majority rule, but he'd benefited from the privileges that apartheid had conferred on whites like him. And he worried. Would he lose his family vineyards? Would his business survive? Did the blacks really have the wherewithal to govern? Then I asked him what he thought of Mandela. He said, without Mandela, this country explodes. He is the glue that holds us all together. Back in Soweto, Milton, my guide and now friend, brought me to a rugby game. Not just any rugby game. It was the first time the South African national team played in the black township. It was an extraordinary day. Rugby, the game of the white oppressor, being played in the heart of all black Soweto. The crowd was black. The players were white. But for the first time in the country's history, some of the umpires were black. I asked one of them what the day meant to him. He told me, today I am not a colored referee. For the first time in my life, I am a South African referee. Mandela understood the powerful symbolism of the day and made a surprise appearance at the stadium. A small group of us reporters had a chance to meet with him. He exuded joy and didn't want to talk about the past, about what rugby used to represent. With a playful twinkle in his eye, he waved away most of our questions and told us simply, he was in Soweto to enjoy a game. It was a new day for South Africa. His security detail drove him onto the field, and he got out and headed for the crowds, virtually unprotected, waving, smiling, even dancing. The crowd roared. Mandela laughed. He even danced and seemed to hold the entire stadium in his arms.
Amazing grace. How sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
There's more of the show in a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.